morning. We're ready to start the merit docket. We'll begin with the case of Jennings versus the Commonwealth. Council ready? We're ready when you are.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Jennifer Titter. I am representing Mr. Jennings in this case this morning. I would respectfully request 5 minutes in rebuttal time.
5 minutes, yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, this case is based on a best evidence argument. It is about a price tag that was testified in the Jennings case by Ms. Shunk. First of all, I would like to address the fact that this is not an ancillary issue at hand. It is an actual element of the offense of grand larceny in 18.2-95. In the Walls versus Commonwealth case, which is 248 Virginia 480, it specifically says that the value of goods specified in 18.2-95 is an essential element of the crime of grand larceny, and the Commonwealth must prove that element beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's not an ancillary matter. It is something that has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt, which is why the best evidence actually applies to the written price tag. In the case, Ms. Shunk testified, they tried to establish how Ms. Shunk knew the price of the jeans. And in doing so, her testimony actually, word for word, was that she was aware of the jeans because she had to ink them and do her audit. And so I have to make sure that there were ink tags on them. If I put them on myself and I place them very close to the price. So she testifies that the only way that she knows the value of the jeans is actually through the price tags, not any other matter, which is something that was brought up in the Watkins case, which is, I understand, not binding, however, was decided on this very issue just last year.
In the context of jeans.
In the context of jeans. It mirrors my case almost exactly. The only thing that in the Watkins case that was not that was clearer in my case was how the loss prevention officer in Watkins knew about the price of the jeans. In Jennings' case, it was very clear that the only way that Ms. Shunk knew that the price of the jeans were what they were was in fact due to the actual price tags, which were not produced in the Jennings case. The Watkins case, even though it's not binding, follows my case very, very closely. And one of the things that we use to rely on the best evidence argument is Butts versus Commonwealth Attorney, which talks about the observations and experiences of human memory is frail, and that unaided testimony of witnesses is unsatisfactory means of establishing facts. It also goes on to talk about that recollections of writings or conversations, especially given dates and figures, is actually more unreliable than any other testimony, which is why we have this best evidence rule. You then rely on the Robinson and the Twine case, which establish a fact that secondary evidence can be used to help buffer some of this evidence, this primary evidence that is not produced. However, in their case, they establish that you must make sure that there is a reason that this primary evidence is not there. And in Jennings, there was no offer of question of why there was no price tag, why there was no receipt. In fact, there was actually no testimony at all to why they did not produce anything other than the testimony of Ms. Shunk. And therefore, we feel that the best evidence objection should have been sustained rather than overruled because of that. The Attorney General brought up some cases in other jurisdictions, Alabama, California, that talk about price hikes, especially the two Alabama cases. Both of those cases, however, actually talk about the price hikes in establishing other facts other than the value. So in Benjamin versus Commonwealth, or Benjamin versus State and Bell versus State, both deal with labels. Benjamin talks about a $35 tag. However, the tag was not used to establish the value of the item stolen. However, it was used as a label rather than a value. That is the same as Bell versus State, which talks about how the best evidence rule does not apply to labels rather than because it is not a writing. However, in this case, the testimony is precisely about the price, which is on the tag, rather than a label to say, oh, it was from this particular store, which is what those two cases were about. No case of the Commonwealth or the Attorney General had brought up in his brief specifically go to the particular proving beyond a reasonable doubt the writing on a price tag. And he even brings up the inscribed chattels law, which in Virginia there is no established inscribed chattels law. Inscribed chattels from the cases that he brought up were Pennsylvania versus Byers and the others talk about something that's affixed to the property rather than something that can be taken off. So it's something that is a label like a Budweiser beer or which was in Lawson case or something that establishes a brand or a serial number or a VIN. That is not the case in here. We're not talking about a branding. And if we were talking about a branding in the Jennings case, I think that there may have been an argument. However, we're talking about a specific element of the grand larceny charge, which has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt.
Counsel, do we have any anything in the record that suggests exactly what these price tags look like if they were tags from the store or if they were tags that were already pre-printed on, attached to the jeans?
We do not. There is no testimony as to what the price tags look like. There's no testimony as to how they are affixed to the jeans other than Ms. Shunk's testimony that the reason she knew it was looking at the price tags as she would put the ink markers on the jeans.
If we agree with your analysis of the case, what's the remedy that you seek?
Your Honor, the remedy I seek and is Watkins was reversed and remanded for trial. What we would be requesting is a reverse and a finding of petty larceny. That would, because we're talking about an element of value, and without that element of value with grand larceny, there is,
doesn't the law allow the Commonwealth an opportunity to proceed forward on a grand larceny charge if it's so advised?
It would, Your Honor, and I think that if the court were to find it, a reverse and a remand for trial would be appropriate for the Commonwealth to try to remedy some of these flaws in their case in general.
And then you would have an opportunity to negotiate.
Right, exactly. But
there's a statute, though, isn't there, that as long as you've requested it, it can be done by agreement. I suppose that all amounts to the same.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the one thing I would like to bring up is that the Attorney General also argues that there was enough evidence that the jeans were, we could reasonably imply that the jeans were placed back in the store, correcting this best evidence argument. However, there was zero testimony as to what happened to the materials, the jeans, and the luggage after they were recovered.
And that would be the Commonwealth's burden to have that in the record.
That's correct, Your Honor. And so I don't think, without those in the record, without those facts and evidence, I don't believe that we can infer at this point in the stage that they were placed back on the sales floor and therefore sold, and that's why that remedies the best evidence, saying that they were unavailable. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chandoval?
Please the court, Chris Chandoval for the Commonwealth. I believe this case presents an opportunity for the court to advance the law in Virginia as to the best evidence rule in a way that would be productive for the law in Virginia on this particular topic. Now, admittedly, this is not a case where I can point the court to binding Virginia case law to argue that that case law compels a particular result. I looked long and hard for those cases and just could not find them, admittedly.
You do get A for creativity.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate
it. Well, and an A for candor.
Well, and so that is the position I find myself in. I would like to submit to the court, that this case presents more than just a simple grand larceny case about missing price tags. This case does actually present a vehicle, if the court should choose to take it, a vehicle for the court to prevent Virginia law on best evidence from moving even further away from its original intended scope and its original intended purpose. So I'd like to explain where I'm coming from on
if,
that.
If we did that, wouldn't there be an unintended consequence of providing an easier than intended burden for the Commonwealth? They don't have to come up with the price tags or stolen merchandise.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I don't think that originally the best evidence rule was intended to require the Commonwealth to require the government in any case where evidence involves numbers or letters to present those original numbers and letters in their original form. If you read Wigmore on the original purpose and scope and intent, the best evidence rule at its heart is about accuracy. And more specifically, there are certain types of writings that from the beginning of the common law, we've been more particularly concerned about.
Deeds and wills.
Deeds and wills and contracts and the types of writings where the words really do matter. The context really does matter. And it doesn't matter what a witness says he or she thinks was in that will, that deed, that contract. You have to see the exact words in their exact context because that is the only thing that has any legal viability is what's stated there in the document itself.
But it matters, doesn't it, just as much as, say, the price in a grand larceny charge?
It's the price of the grand larceny charge certainly matters, but for
and hasn't the General Assembly made it pretty easy in terms of the price tag exception, so to speak, and isn't that a policy decision that is really not that tough for the Commonwealth to follow?
So, admittedly, in hindsight, it should have been easy to produce a price tag, to produce a receipt, or to ask about the unavailability of those things and to have the opportunity to say, this is why I can't produce a price tag or I can't produce a receipt. However, I would submit that there are going to be cases where, for one reason or another, a witness misplaces a price tag or misplaces the receipt and for whatever reason does not bring that piece of evidence to trial. And in a circumstance such as that, perhaps you can't say that it's unavailable because maybe you could have found it and brought it to trial, but if the trial is set to go forth that day, the question becomes, should we penalize the Commonwealth and that witness for not bringing that piece of evidence to trial? I know the response from the other side would be, yes, of course, we should penalize the Commonwealth in that context. But I would submit that if the purpose of the best evidence rule is really about accuracy, and that's really initially what it is about, why is it that we should have a rule that, in my humble opinion, to some extent, where we've gotten, puts formalism over substance, and that we allow this witness to come in and testify, yes, I saw 8 pairs of jeans in that stack. And yes, another witness, I watched over the TV, I could count the way they were folded, it looked like 8 pairs of jeans. We trust the trial court to determine whether or not that witness is being credible, whether or not she's telling the truth, whether or not her memory is correct. And yet, because of this best evidence rule and where it's gotten to in Virginia today and in many courts, we say we don't trust the witness and we don't trust the trial court to be able to weigh her testimony about, yes, I saw a price tag and it had the numbers 40 on them. If we can trust a witness to say I saw 8 pairs of jeans, I would submit that the fact finder should be able to make the same credibility determination for a quote-unquote writing that is as simple as the number 40.
But isn't it apples and oranges to a degree? Because the quantity of the pairs of jeans, that's something that's not arguably hearsay. That's just somebody's observation as opposed to reciting what they saw in a price tag, which then becomes hearsay because you're lifting something that you just read.
Well, whether or not it's hearsay is a separate issue, whether or not there's a declarant and that it's actually a statement being offered for the truth of the matter. However, I would submit that the number of genes in that stack is just as important in a case like this for establishing value, because you need a certain number of pairs of genes to get over the $200, just like you need the number 40 on the price tag to prove how much those genes were worth. So in terms of the weight of the significance of the evidence at issue, they're very similar. And
if you can't establish the price of the genes, it doesn't matter how many you see in the stack. Is that a pretty fair statement?
If someone stole 200 pairs of genes, then I would submit you don't have to establish that they're each worth $1.
Not going to be outlandish.
But in a context like this where there's only 8 pairs, then we did need some testimony as to what the value, or some evidence in the form of a price tag perhaps, as to what the value of those genes is. That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. So we did need both. We couldn't have one without the other. I would submit that if she had no idea how many pairs of genes were in that stack, though, that might not be good enough. It could have been 2 or 3 pairs, and they're only $40 each. That might not be good enough. So both matter. In Virginia, if we were operating on a blank slate, I would be here arguing several more arguments that I can't argue because of the state of the law in Virginia. And this obviously is not the forum to make those arguments. I would like to argue that this is really not the type of writing, as I argued earlier, that was originally intended to be covered by the scope of the best evidence rule. This is not a deed, a will, a contract, etc. But because we broadly defined the word writing in our rules of evidence in Virginia, our case law, that argument is foreclosed in this forum. Second, I would like to argue that we're not really trying to prove the content of the writing here. And this gets back to Judge Atlee's question, I think. Because the price tag itself does not establish the value of those genes. It's some evidence of the value of the genes, but it doesn't establish it. The value is an independent fact of what's stated on the price tag.
Well, then you'd be in worse shape.
How so, Your Honor?
Well, I mean, if the price tag doesn't show value, what else have you got in the evidence that would?
Well, what I'm asserting, and correct, if we don't have the price tags in this particular case, we didn't have anything else. But in terms of the best evidence rule and whether or not it applies and whether or not it should apply to this type of a document, courts in other jurisdictions, even as to price tags, have said you're really not trying to prove what the price tag says for the sake of the price tag itself. Because whether or not a pair of jeans has a price tag on it, I've been at stores before where I've gone up to the cash register and it turns out there's no price tag on that item, and I joked, well, I guess it's free today because there's no price tag. And of course we know that is not the way stores work. A price tag doesn't create the value of the genes. Those genes have value independent of whether or not they have a price tag.
A price tag gives the MSRP, but there's a sign above the rack that gives the actual price of it.
Correct. And in determining value, you have to look at not just what is the price tag, but is it reasonable to infer that people are actually buying and selling these genes based on what's stated on the price tag. So for example, a gas station owner who's having problems with kids shoplifting bars of candy can't put a $200 price tag on that candy bar and then charge them with grand larceny just because the price tag says $200. The price tag doesn't establish the value, it's some evidence of value, but it's actually a fact existing independent of what's written there in the price tag itself. So that's an argument that's worked in other courts. It's an argument that I hope to make here until I found 3 or 4 Virginia Supreme Court cases, most of which going back much in the distant past, which unfortunately foreclosed that argument in this forum. But I present those arguments to the court to explain that we've gotten to the point in Virginia, my humble opinion, where the best evidence rule covers things that are outside the scope and beyond the purpose of the best evidence rule as it was intended. And so this inscribed chattels doctrine is a doctrine that has not yet been argued in Virginia courts, that has not yet been decided on one way or the other, whether or not objects that have writing on them could be treated differently than a piece of paper with writing on it, than
a
document.
Genes with a price tag attached to them, though, that's different than an item that has an inscription on the product itself, isn't it?
Right, so admittedly there is some difference there.
And you don't even have evidence in the record about the type of tag that's attached to the jeans. Like, for example, if it was a pre-printed Levi's tag that sometimes you have on jeans that has already the price noted, and it's not the store tag, then that might be a better analogy than if there's just a you know, a store tag on it that has the price. But you don't have that in the record.
That's correct. We don't have anything in the record about what exactly these price tags look like. We do have in the record the testimony from the loss prevention officer that she knew how much the jeans were worth, how much they were valued at, based on what was on the price tags. So I think that that creates an inference that this wasn't just a price tag that came with the jeans and they actually had a different price in the store that they were selling them for, but that the prices on the price tags were the price that they were selling the jeans for based on her testimony and her reliance upon it. And admittedly, on the spectrum of obvious writings, deeds, wills, contracts, etc., and obvious objects or physical chattels containing writings, guns, safes, I think I saw a barn door in one of the cases. On the spectrum of one end to the other, price tags fall somewhere in the middle. And admittedly, it's not a whole lot more than a piece of paper with writing on it. But I would submit to the court that it is enough more than just a piece of paper with writing that it can be called an inscribed chattel. And we do have, I was able to cite to the court two cases from Alabama which have dealt with price tags. Both of those cases, the court didn't say that the dress plus the price tag is an inscribed chattel. The courts in both cases said the price tag itself, by itself, is an inscribed chattel, can be considered and is going to be considered an inscribed chattel for purposes of Alabama law. So it's an object, it's a thing with writing on it. And as a result, testimony about its contents are not automatically admissible. It doesn't completely remove it from the realm of best evidence, but there's kind of a different test that's done as to inscribed chattels. And I cited the court from some of the case law, some of the factors that courts look at in determining whether a trial judge should be able to admit testimony about writing on inscribed chattel. Those factors include the complexity of the writing, how complicated the writing is, the danger of mistransmission of its content. So what are the odds that the witness is going to get it wrong if she remembers and tries to restate what was contained there in the writing, the difficulty of producing the original, and then fourth, whether there's actually a bona fide dispute as to the contents of that writing. So in this case, whether there's actually evidence that maybe those jeans were on sale for $10 or maybe the price tag said something else. All of those factors get at what I've submitted as the original purpose of the best evidence rule, that we're really concerned about accuracy. So in applying this inscribed chattels test to items such as a price tag with writing on it, we allow trial judges to make a determination as to whether or not we can rely upon a witness's testimony about what that item says in a way that we're still confident about the accuracy of her testimony, about the accuracy of the writing that she's testifying about. In this particular case, a price tag that says $40 is not a complex writing. I would submit that a trial judge should be given more discretion to determine whether or not he or she can trust that witness's testimony. In this particular case, the trial judge actually went out of its way to question the witness and say, are you sure about that $40? Most of the time I see $39.99 or you know, something along those lines. And she came back and said, yes, I'm very sure, I'm very confident. The price tags were right by the ink tags, and I'm very familiar with these jeans. $40, she was unequivocal. So in terms of how complex it was, in terms of the danger that she was gonna get it wrong, I would submit to the court that those dangers just really weren't at issue here. And so in terms of what the best evidence rule really cares about and should care about, I would submit that the inscribed chattels doctrine, which of course, as I stated, is not foreclosed in Virginia yet, and the court can adopt that doctrine in this particular case, that doctrine would allow this court to kind of rein in some of the form over substance results that we sometimes get in this particular context.
Counsel, what's your position on whether if we disagree and do not adopt your line of thinking and we reverse, what's your position on whether it should be remanded or a finding petty larceny?
I think following Watkins and statute, I think the result is to remand for the Commonwealth to determine whether or not it has enough to attempt to go forward on the grand larceny charge. That would be my position as to that. Unless there are any further questions from the court, I'd ask the court to affirm, and I'll rest on my brief.
Very well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal, Mr. Tippett?
Your Honors, as I stated before, I don't believe that the inscribed titles doctrine applies to price tags as far as what the Attorney General is trying to argue. As I stated before, Benjamin versus State and Bell versus State, which are the two Alabama cases that they rely on heavily, both deal with price tags, yes, but not the specific writing in the price tags. Both of those cases actually rely on the price tags as to establish either the store that the items were taken from or to establish something else other than the actual price. Here we have a different situation because the cases were very clear, especially in Walls, where we talk about the fact that in grand larceny, the actual price has to be over $200, and that has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. It's an essential element to the actual charge itself. And so Bell and Benjamin don't address that because in Alabama, that's not what they were discussing. We're talking about the actual evidence of the value of jeans. And it is established that you can prove it other than the price, the fair market, you can prove value with fair market value, but as in Jennings, there is no other evidence other than these price tags, which means that the price tags were being used to testify as the truth of the matter asserted on the actual price tags. I know that the Attorney General was trying to argue that words matter and wills and deeds and they're more important in those, and I would argue that they aren't because we're talking about people's freedom in criminal cases. So words aren't more important in civil matters than they are in criminal matters. We're talking about people, we're taking people's freedoms away with the specific writing. And again, in Buss is very clear as to why we have a best evidence rule. And I understand it's a 1926 case, and so it's a bit old, but it talks about the fact that human memory is frail. It is something, especially with figures, especially with numbers, that has issues remembering. And so that is why Buss established this rule is to so that people can't just come in and say, oh, I remember it being this, and being mistaken. We have a case that firmly establishes the reasons behind the best evidence rule, and it's very clear about talking about why figures and dates and conversations are exceedingly important to prove with the original writings because of the fact that memory is not necessarily accurate. And it's not that memory's getting better now in 2015. We're not taught that that's not the issue. So memory would be the same in 1926 as it would be in 2015.
Well, in your case, though, she was pretty clear on it being $40. And so in your record, there's not a memory issue, is there?
No, Your Honor, and as the Attorney General said, the judge actually questioned her on that, and she was clear. However, again, she was not able to establish that she recollected it from anything other than the actual price tags. And as far as that goes with the accuracy, that's why we have the best evidence. And it wouldn't have been hard for the Commonwealth Attorney to either produce a receipt, a price tag, or even have a reason why it wasn't produced. But in Jennings, there was nothing. There was no reason why it wasn't produced. There was no description of what happened to the items after they were recovered. And so, therefore, we're left with this blank in the record as to, other than these price tags that are at issue, that's the only reason that she remembered what the price was, not anything else as far as her memory goes. And with that, Your Honor, I would respectfully ask that this case be reversed. I would respectfully ask that you find him guilty of a petty larceny, but if the court wishes to remand for a further trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In keeping with our tradition,